Emma's phone vibrated again. Another fake screenshot of Dean texting someone named Elle. A message she'd never sent. He looked at her, eyes hollow with doubt. "I found this on your phone," he said. Her heart clenched. How could a harmless text be twisted into proof of betrayal? But this was her design. From the subtly edited voicemails dripping with insinuations to the carefully placed coffee-stained receipt hidden in his jacket, each fabricated clue pulled him deeper into second-guessing himself. Dean's confidence crumbled into anxiety. He felt lost, alone on an island of lies she crafted, and she watched him waver, because dependency meant control. But when Dean starts comparing timestamps and remembering conversations that don't match her evidence, Emma realizes her illusions might unravel. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The First Doubt. Dean Whittaker wasn't the type of man who lost his grip easily. At 31, he ran a tight ship as a project manager, calm under pressure, analytical, and loyal to a fault. When he met Emma Vargas at a friend's engagement party, she felt like a breath of fresh air, witty, playful, disarming. She looked at him like he was the most fascinating man in the room. What started as flirtation turned into whirlwind romance. Within a month, they were spending nearly every night together. Emma said she felt safe with him, said no one had ever seen her the way he did. Dean believed her, every word, but then came the first seed of doubt. It was small, harmless even. Dean was on the phone with his sister one night when Emma walked in and smiled until she heard her name mentioned. He was laughing about how Emma left post-it notes everywhere, even on his cereal boxes. Her smile froze. "Why are you talking about me behind my back?" Dean blinked, confused. "It wasn't behind your back, babe. It was just a joke." Emma's voice dropped, soft and sad. "You joke about me to other people? That hurts, Dean. I thought I could trust you." She didn't raise her voice. She didn't cry. But her silence afterward, her turned back in bed, stung worse than yelling. The next.
Marcus Hale set out at dawn. Hale, a former cybercrime specialist turned PI, had seen many manipulators before. But he admitted Emma was on another level. "She's not improvising," Hale said as they drove. "She's orchestrating. Everything she's done has been built on control, performance, and plausible deniability." Dean nodded. "She doesn't lie to escape. She lies to dominate." Cape Haven looked like a postcard. White boats in the harbor. Families walking dogs. Artists painting waves under umbrellas. But beneath the small-town charm, Hale found something fast. Emma Vargas had checked into the Mariner's Nest Motel under a new name, Isabel Reese. And she wasn't alone. "She's been meeting with someone regularly," Hale said, showing Dean surveillance photos. "Older man, expensive car. We're running plates now." Dean stared at the photos, rage and confusion battling inside him. "Who is he?" Hale shrugged. "Could be a lawyer, could be a fixer, could be someone she's grooming." Dean swallowed hard. "Like she groomed me." They watched from a distance as Emma, or Isabel, went about her day. She had changed her look. Blonder, softer clothes, different gait, like she was playing a new character. She worked part-time at a seaside bookstore, volunteered at a local animal shelter, made friends with the barista. People liked her. They had no idea who she really was, but Hale noticed something else. Every time Emma left the bookstore, she walked to a specific street camera and paused, just long enough to be seen, as if she wanted someone watching. "She's feeding a narrative," Hale muttered, making sure there's a version of her visible at all times, smiling, safe, saint-like. Dean realized why. She was preparing for something public, something big. Then came the shock. Hale returned from a meeting with a contact in local law enforcement. "Emma's filed a restraining order," he said. Dean's blood went cold. "Against me?" "Not just you," Hale said grimly. "She's also filed one against a woman named Allison Whittaker, your sister." Dean's voice turned brittle. "She's never even met my sister." "Doesn't matter. She claimed Allison was stalking her on social media, spreading lies, harassing her with burner accounts. Dean clenched his fists. It's all fabrication. Hale nodded. And?
It's working. The court date is set for 2 weeks from now, in Cape Haven. Emma had drawn her next battleground, but Dean wasn't playing defense anymore. They visited the local police and handed over evidence, timestamps, deepfake voice comparisons, cloud backup logs. Hale explained how Emma had used AI software to splice voice recordings and fabricate texts. They also submitted footage of Emma planting evidence, including the condom wrapper incident. It was solid, clear, unedited. The lead investigator reviewed the material with a straight face. "We'll look into it," he said. Dean left the station feeling the chill of bureaucracy. Justice wasn't swift. It was skeptical, and Emma was exploiting that. The breakthrough came by accident. Hale had tapped into Emma's burner phone number and traced its call records. One number kept appearing, a woman named Riley Monroe. They dug in. Riley was a former roommate of Emma's from 5 years ago. Records showed Emma had filed a civil harassment suit against her, too. The pattern matched. Dean and Hale found her in a nearby city. Riley was hesitant at first. Wary, closed off. But when Dean explained what Emma had done to him, she softened. "She did the same thing to me," Riley said. "Told people I was obsessed with her. Told my boyfriend I was hitting on her. Planted weed in my car and called the cops." Dean's jaw dropped. "Why?" "Because I knew too much," Riley said. "And I wouldn't play along." She handed Dean a flash drive. "She doesn't know I kept these. Old emails. Voice clips. A video she sent someone. Practicing her crying face in the mirror." Dean and Hale exchanged glances. This was the nail in the coffin. Back in Cape Haven, they filed a counter-motion with the court. Dean's attorney, brought in by Hale, submitted a formal request to consolidate all the evidence and open a criminal investigation into fraud, emotional abuse, and filing of false reports. It would take time. But the walls were closing in. Dean walked alone down the beach that evening. The sky was slate blue. The water still. He thought about how Emma had once said, "I only lie when people don't deserve the truth." She believed that, deeply. To her, control wasn't cruelty, it was survival. But for the first time, she wasn't the one writing the script. He was. And the next chapter would be hers to survive. Chapter 6. Trial by Fire. The courtroom in Cape Haven was small. Just 3 rows of benches, sun filtering through dusty windows, and the stale scent of old pine benches. Emma sat at the front, flanked by her attorney, dressed in soft beige and a powder blue scarf, her hair braided to one side. She looked like a schoolteacher, not a predator. Her expression was composed, eyes glassy but not red, just enough moisture to suggest vulnerability. Dean watched her from the defense table. She wouldn't meet his gaze, but that didn't matter. He had come prepared. The judge called the hearing to order. "Petitioner, you may proceed." Emma's attorney stood. "Your Honor, my client, Ms. Isabel Reese, formerly Emma Vargas, comes before this court with a heavy heart. She has endured ongoing harassment from the respondent, Dean Whittaker, as well as from a third party, his sister, Allison Whittaker. Ms. Vargas has moved to this town to seek peace, only to be followed, monitored, and defamed." Dean clenched his fists under the table. Emma sniffed softly. Then she took the stand. Her voice trembled with precision. "He would gaslight me, make me feel like everything was my fault. He'd isolate me, check my phone, accuse me of cheating. Then he'd turn sweet again. I was trapped. I thought I was crazy." She dabbed her eyes with a tissue, careful not to smudge her mascara. "I left to start over, but he found me, showed up in town, sent people after me. And his sister, she called my workplace, pretending to be a detective. She harassed me on Instagram. I had to delete everything just to breathe." Dean's attorney didn't interrupt. She let Emma finish her script. Then the real trial began. Cross-examination. "Miss Vargas," Dean's lawyer began calmly, "can you tell us the name of the clinic where you received your pregnancy confirmation?" Emma nodded. "Sure, Springwell Women's Health." "And you submitted a document to Mr. Whittaker to confirm this pregnancy, is that correct?" "Yes." "Did you know Springwell has no record of any patient named Isabel Reese or Emma Vargas in the last 6 months?"
Emma blinked. No, that's not possible. I went there. The attorney nodded. We also have a representative from Springwell ready to testify under subpoena that your document was fabricated. The ID code on your lab slip doesn't exist. Emma's smile faltered. Still, she didn't break. Then came the footage. The surveillance video from Dean's smart home, the one showing Emma entering his apartment late at night, planting the condom wrapper in his drawer. The courtroom went quiet. The judge leaned forward. Ms. Vargas, would you like to explain this video? Emma's lawyer stood. Objection. This evidence hasn't been authenticated. It was submitted with chain of custody documentation, Dean's attorney replied, along with metadata from the camera system and a sworn affidavit from the system administrator confirming the date and time. The judge nodded. Overruled. Ms. Vargas? Emma's eyes darted. She smiled faintly. That must have been old, from before we broke up. Dean's lawyer followed up. You claimed you were out of town the night this video was recorded. No answer. And yet here you are, inside his home. Emma looked toward the back of the courtroom, as if someone might save her. No one did. Dean took the stand next. He spoke slowly, not as a victim, as a man reclaiming his voice. I loved Emma, he said. I defended her when she said people hurt her. I tried to be her safe place. But over time, things started happening that I couldn't explain, until I realized I wasn't going crazy. I was being gaslit. He paused, looked toward her. Everything she accused me of, she did to me. He submitted backup texts, timestamps, voice files, even Riley Monroe's affidavit, detailing Emma's identical pattern of behavior years ago. It was undeniable. And the final piece? The video Riley had given him, Emma in her bedroom, practicing crying in front of the mirror, rehearsing the exact breakdown she'd performed that morning in court. The judge recessed for review. When the court returned, his ruling was swift. I find the petitioner's request for a restraining order to be not only unsubstantiated, but based on falsified evidence and deceptive intent. I hereby dismiss the request in full and forward this case to the district attorney's office for review of potential criminal charges against the petitioner. Emma's mask finally cracked. She whispered something to her lawyer. Her hands trembled, but she
didn't cry. Not anymore. Outside the courthouse, reporters waited. Someone had leaked the footage. Maybe a clerk. Maybe Riley. Maybe Karma. Emma walked through the flashes, head down, scarf pulled up. Dean stood by his car, watching her go. Allison walked up beside him. She'll spin it, she said. She always does. Dean nodded. Maybe. But now she's known. Allison placed a hand on his shoulder. And you're free. For the first time in nearly a year, Dean exhaled and felt the ground beneath him steady. Chapter 7. Recovery isn't linear. Dean believed that freedom would feel lighter, easier, but healing from a nightmare doesn't mean the dreams stop coming. Months passed after the trial. Emma was charged with criminal fraud, forgery, and falsifying reports, but she disappeared before her arraignment. Authorities believed she fled to another state, possibly changing identities again. Her social media vanished, accounts deleted or scrubbed of personal data. Emma Vargas was a ghost, but Dean remained haunted. Therapy helped. At first, he struggled to even trust his counselor, constantly second-guessing if the sessions were being recorded, twisted, or misunderstood. But slowly, the fog began to lift. His therapist described gaslighting as a form of invisible violence. It's trauma, she said gently. Just because you can't see the wounds doesn't mean they aren't there. Dean worked on rebuilding the simple things. He reconnected with his old friends, even attended a few trivia nights. His sister Allison stayed close, watchful without smothering. He got a new apartment and installed security cameras, more for comfort than necessity. But sometimes, at night, the echoes of Emma's lies still whispered in his ear. He double-checked calendars, reread texts, and struggled to trust himself fully. Recovery wasn't linear, but Dean was learning to live with that. Exactly 1 year after the trial, Dean took a solo trip to Cape Haven. He visited the small coffee shops, the bookstore, the sandy beach where Emma had reinvented herself. He wasn't searching for her. He was reclaiming this place for himself. Dean walked down the pier, ocean waves lapping gently, air cool on his face. A woman painting nearby smiled warmly, unaware of his past or his wounds. It felt good to be anonymous. Then his phone buzzed, an unknown number. His pulse quickened. Text. You look good. Healing suits you. He glanced around sharply, heart pounding. Tourists laughing, couples holding hands. No sign of Emma. His hands shook as he replied, "Leave me alone." Then he blocked the number. But he couldn't block the feeling that she was still out there, watching, waiting. When he returned home, he changed numbers. Again. Updated security settings. Again. His therapist reminded him that anxiety was natural. Emma had trained him to doubt reality itself. "Your job isn't to eliminate anxiety," she said. "It's to learn how to live, despite it." Dean nodded, determined. Days became weeks, then months. Emma's silence felt permanent. Perhaps that text was her final twisted goodbye, a reminder that scars remained even after wounds closed. Then one rainy evening, Allison stopped by. They ordered takeout, talked movies, and laughed over memories. It felt normal, safe. Until Allison's expression shifted. "Dean, something came in my mailbox today, addressed to you." He froze. "What is it?" She handed him a slim envelope. "No stamp. Hand-delivered." He opened it carefully. Inside was a single Polaroid photograph. Emma, hair darker now, sunglasses reflecting the camera flash, standing on a busy street in a foreign city. The sign behind her was printed in French. On the back, handwritten neatly, "A new chapter. Wish you were here." Dean stared at the photo for a long moment, then, very deliberately, tore it into small pieces and dropped them into the garbage. Allison looked worried. "Should we report this?" Dean shook his head slowly. "No. She wants attention. She wants fear. I'm done giving her either." That night, Dean dreamed of Emma again. But this time she wasn't threatening or cruel. She stood far away, silent, unable to reach him. Dean turned his back on her and walked away, feeling lighter with every step. When he woke, he felt different, stronger. He knew Emma was still out there somewhere, performing new scripts, crafting new personas. But her power over him had finally broken. Dean realized healing wasn't about forgetting. It was about reclaiming who he was, despite the scars. She had taken enough. One afternoon, Dean returned to the cafe where he'd first met Emma. He sat quietly, drinking coffee, watching people talk, flirt, laugh. Life continued, messy but hopeful. And so would he. He thought about the journey, the confusion, isolation, fear, and ultimately survival. He knew he would carry those experiences with him forever, but they didn't define him. Not anymore. Emma had controlled his story long enough. Now Dean was ready to write his own ending. Morning. She was gone before sunrise. No note. No good morning text. When she finally messaged that afternoon, it read, "I'm just trying to protect myself. I've been through so much." Dean apologized, even though he wasn't sure what for. That was the beginning. 2 weeks later, it escalated. Emma showed him a screenshot of a text conversation between Dean and a woman named Lindsay. The messages looked flirtatious, short and suggestive. "I saw this pop up on your phone when you were in the shower," she said, her tone flat. "Lindsay, you never mentioned her." Dean stared at the screenshot, confused. "That's not... I've never texted anyone named Lindsay. I don't even have that number." Emma shrugged. "Must have deleted it. Why would someone send me this otherwise?" Dean checked his phone history. Nothing. But Emma looked so hurt, so betrayed. "I'm not accusing you," she said. "I'm just saying it feels like something's off." Dean couldn't prove anything. And so again, he apologized. By month three, the patterns became harder to ignore. His phone would go missing for 10 minutes, then reappear on the nightstand. Voicemails from coworkers were partially erased or edited. One clip Emma played back said, "Let's keep this between us. You looked good last night." Dean was sure it was his coworker Amy's voice, but that wasn't something she would ever say. Not in that tone, not at that hour. Still, he couldn't explain it. Emma sat across from him, arms folded, voice trembling. If you're cheating on me, just say it. Don't make me feel crazy. And somehow, he started to believe he might be the problem. By month four, Dean's friends barely heard from him. Emma didn't like them, said they were toxic, judgmental, jealous. She said she needed all of him to feel safe. I've been abandoned before, she whispered. Don't make me feel that again. Dean stopped going out after work. He stopped texting people back. Even his sister Allison noticed the change. You look tired, she said during a quick coffee break. And paranoid. You okay? He hesitated, then said something he never thought he would. I think I'm going crazy. Allison narrowed her eyes. Why? Dean rubbed his temples. I feel like I'm always apologizing for things I didn't do, but I can't tell what's real anymore. Allison leaned forward. Dean, that's not you. That's someone making you feel that way. That night, Dean brought it up to Emma. Gently, cautiously. I think we need to talk about what's been happening. I'm confused, Em. Something's off, and I can't figure out what. Emma's face shifted instantly, hurt, then fury. You're accusing me of lying now, after everything I've been through, after I opened up to you. No, I'm not, he started. But she was already gathering her things. I knew it. I knew you'd turn on me eventually. They always do. Dean stood frozen in the doorway as she walked out. She didn't answer his calls for 3 days. When she finally returned, she brought him his favorite coffee, kissed his forehead, and said, I forgive you. Dean's relief was overwhelming. He didn't realize the trap had already closed. What Dean didn't know, what he couldn't know, was that Emma had an app on her phone that could simulate text threads from any number. She had access to a second voice editing tool. She'd taken voice clips from his co-worker, Amy, during office parties and meetings, and stitched them together into the voicemail he heard. Emma wasn't protecting herself. She was performing. Dean was the audience, and he had no idea the real show had only just begun. Chapter 2. Fabricated Realities. Dean didn't sleep much anymore. His nights were filled with half-dreams and fragmented thoughts, like he was constantly trying to solve a puzzle that had missing pieces. By morning, he felt drained, but Emma always showed up smiling. Coffee in one hand, a little note tucked into the sleeve of the cup. You're my favorite person, even when you push me away. She was loving again. Affectionate. Sexually intense. It felt like the relationship was back on track. But it also felt like walking through a house where the furniture kept shifting. Nothing stayed where he left it. It started with his calendar. One day, Emma reminded him about a dinner they were supposed to attend. You promised we'd go to that gallery opening, she said, tilting her head. I bought a dress for it and everything. Dean checked his phone. There was no mention of the event, no text, no invite, nothing on his calendar. I don't remember promising, he said cautiously. Emma's face fell. Wow.
So now I'm just imagining our conversations. No, I didn't say that. Maybe you just don't care, Dean. That's fine, you don't have to pretend.
She left in silence again. That night, he added the gallery event to his calendar manually, just in case. The next strange moment came 2 days later. Emma was doing laundry when she held up a pair of lace underwear. This isn't mine, she said. Dean looked at it, baffled. Then, whose is it? She held his stare, her lips tightening into a frown. That's the question, isn't it? Dean felt heat crawl up his neck. I swear I've never seen that before. She didn't yell. She just looked at him with such slow disappointment, like someone watching a dog run into traffic.
I think you're sick, Dean, she whispered. I think you need help.
The weight of it started to crush him. Each week brought new evidence of supposed betrayal. A flirty voicemail on his office line. A condom wrapper she found under his car seat. A lipstick smear on his gym towel. The problem was, Dean didn't even own that brand of towel. Still, every time he tried to defend himself, Emma would get quiet. Tearful. Withdrawn. You're gaslighting me, she'd say, irony cutting like a blade. I never thought you would be the one. And he'd fold. Because by now, Dean was conditioned to believe he could be wrong. Maybe he'd forgotten. Maybe he did say something he didn't remember.
Maybe stress was making him blank out. Then one night, something strange happened. Dean had left his phone on the kitchen counter while he showered. When he came out, Emma was already in bed. He noticed the notifications bar was slightly different. Messages from his co-worker, Amy, were now appearing with suggestive previews. It hadn't looked that way before. He checked the message thread and froze. The texts were lewd, specific, out of character. But they also felt familiar. That's when he remembered. Amy had sent him messages about an office prank weeks ago, a joke involving fake flirting. Everyone on the team was in on it. Dean even remembered showing Emma the messages back then, laughing. These weren't new, they were altered. The emojis were different, the order was wrong, and the timestamps didn't line up. Dean's heart raced. He took screenshots, saved them to a private folder,
and backed them up to his cloud drive. Something wasn't right, and for the first time, he allowed himself to think it. Emma might be the one gaslighting him. But before he could bring it up, she flipped the script again. Emma showed up at his apartment, crying hysterically, her makeup smeared, hair tangled. "I think someone's following me," she said. "I saw the same car parked outside my apartment two nights in a row. I think someone's watching me." Dean immediately stepped into protector mode. "Did you call the cops?" She shook her head. "They won't take me seriously. But if anything happens to me, I just need you to know. I never stopped loving you, even after everything." Dean hugged her tight, unsure if the fear in his chest was for her or of her. He didn't realize it yet, but she had just introduced the next phase of control. Fear. If she couldn't keep him through guilt or affection, she would bind him through worry. Later that night, while Emma showered, Dean checked her laptop. He wasn't proud of it, but something inside him refused to ignore the red flags anymore. She had a folder labeled Saved Proofs, buried inside a set of work documents. What he found there shattered him. Fabricated screenshots of texts between Dean and various women. Voicemail splices labeled Amy Edit 1 and Amy Edit 2. A selfie of Emma crying with the file name Innocent JPG. Dean sat in silence, staring at the screen. She wasn't reacting. She was planning. And every emotional wound he'd been nursing for months, she had orchestrated. He heard the water stop. Panic surged. He closed the laptop, wiped down the keys with his sleeve, and forced himself to breathe. Emma walked out in a towel and smiled sweetly. "What are you doing, babe?" "Just checking work stuff," Dean lied. She walked over, kissed his temple, and whispered, "You're the only person who's never left me." Dean didn't sleep that night, because now he knew the truth, and he had no idea how to escape it. Chapter 3. The Isolation Trap. Dean wasn't ready for war. He never had been. His nature was calm, collaborative, someone who believed that if you spoke gently and listened hard enough, things could always be worked out. But now, with Emma, words were weapons, and she wielded them with precision. He needed an exit plan, and the first step was connection. Dean started small. He messaged his sister Allison first. "Can we talk soon? It's important. Need to see you." She replied almost immediately. "Yes, tonight. No excuses." Next, he rejoined a group chat with his co-workers that Emma had once labeled toxic. It felt foreign, like opening the blinds after months in the dark. Messages pinged in. "Hey man, long time. Still alive? Missed you at trivia nights." He smiled for the first time in weeks. But that night, Emma noticed. "You were on your phone a lot today," she said, not angry. "Just observant." Dean kept it light. "Just catching up with Allison and the guys from work." Emma tilted her head. "Isn't that the group that sent you those flirty texts?" Dean hesitated. "That wasn't what happened, and you know it." Her face darkened. "So now you're defending them." She walked to the kitchen and started slamming drawers. Not yelling, just making noise. "I thought we were finally healing," she muttered. "I guess I was wrong. Again." Dean didn't follow. He let her stay in the kitchen. But he noticed something odd. She left her phone unlocked on the couch, almost like she wanted him to look. He didn't. Not yet.
The next day he met Allison at a cafe three neighborhoods away, far from Emma's usual path. He looked thinner than she remembered. Tired. Hollow.
Jesus, Dean, she said softly. You look like you've been in a car crash.
He rubbed his eyes. I think I'm in something worse.
He told her everything, about the fake screenshots, the doctored voicemails, the emotional withdrawals, the staged discoveries. He didn't embellish or exaggerate, just the facts.
Allison listened carefully. Then she said, Dean, you're being abused.
He nodded. I know.
The plan was simple. Put space between them. Not a breakup yet. He needed more evidence, more leverage. But he'd stop sleeping at Emma's, reestablish his own routines, and regain control of his schedule. Allison offered her guest room for a few days.
I'll say I have a work emergency, he said.
She nodded. I'll help you pack. But when Dean arrived at his apartment later that day, Emma was already inside. She was sitting on his couch, looking composed. Too composed.
I needed to be here when you got home, she said.
Dean forced a smile. What's going on? She took a breath, then dropped the bomb. I'm pregnant. Everything stopped. Dean's ears rang. He stared at her, trying to find a reaction, any emotion, but his body stayed frozen. What? He finally whispered.
Emma nodded, placing her hand on her stomach.
I wasn't going to say anything. Not yet. But I can't lose you. Not now. Dean searched her face for a lie, but Emma was always two steps ahead. He couldn't tell anymore where the truth ended and the manipulation began. She handed him a folded piece of paper, a lab slip from a clinic. Positive test result. He scanned it. No name printed. No date. Just a simple typed positive. You believe me, right? She asked, eyes wide. Dean nodded slowly. But inside, a storm was building. He texted Allison from the bathroom. She says she's pregnant. No proof. I think it's fake. Allison replied instantly. We need to talk now. FaceTime? He called her later that night, quietly, from his car. I'm not staying there tonight, he said. I need out. Allison agreed. I'll come get you. But Emma was one move ahead. The next morning, Dean woke to over 40 missed calls. From work. From unknown numbers. From his landlord. He checked his email. Subject. Disciplinary notice. Harassment allegation. A formal complaint had been filed against him. Accusation. Inappropriate behavior toward a former partner. Emotional threats. Possession of compromising material. Dean's breath caught. Attached was a statement, supposedly from Emma, sent to his company's HR department. He scanned the text in disbelief. She accused him of stalking, of manipulating her. She'd even included screenshots, out-of-context messages, vague threats that were twisted from old texts, edited audio clips that sounded damning. The woman who had built a cage around his life had now set it on fire and made sure he got blamed for the smoke. Dean's phone rang. It was Emma. I didn't want to do this, she said coldly. But you left me no choice. His voice was calm. Too calm. Why are you doing this?
You think you can just leave? She hissed. You made me do this. You broke me. And now I'm showing you what that feels like.
Dean didn't respond. He hung up. And for the first time in months, he felt clear. She had declared war. And he was finally ready to fight back. Chapter 4. The Counter-Strike. Dean didn't go back to work the next day. There was no point. Until the allegations were cleared, he'd been placed on administrative leave. No access to his work email. No client contact. HR told him to respect the investigation process. Emma's story was working, but Dean wasn't broken. He was finally awake. He spent the first 24 hours in Allison's guest room, combing through everything. His old texts, call logs, voicemails, cloud backups, anything that could prove Emma's manipulations. In a folder labeled iTunes Backups, he found an old iPhone restore from 3 months ago, one of the text threads Emma had doctored between Dean and his coworker Amy, was in its original form. No flirting, no late-night innuendos. Just, hey, I left the client binder on your desk. Hope your cold's better. D. Dean took screenshots, time-stamped everything. Then he created a folder on a hard drive titled Truth. Next, he reopened his synced smart home logs. Dean had a habit of syncing his apartment's smart door lock and camera system to his email. He never thought he'd need it. But now, gold. One entry stood out. 2 weeks ago, 2:14 a.m., Emma had entered his apartment with her own key. When she'd claimed she was out of town visiting her mother, he downloaded the video. It showed her walking in with a small Ziploc bag. She moved swiftly. No hesitation. She opened a drawer, placed something inside, then walked out without even glancing around. That something would turn out to be the condom wrapper she discovered later that week. Dean added the clip to the folder. Piece by piece, he was building his own case. Then came the breakthrough. Dean remembered the fabricated pregnancy result, the typed-up positive slip with no date or name. He called the clinic printed on the bottom. "Hi," he said carefully. "I think someone may have used your lab's name on a fake pregnancy result. I'm trying to confirm if a test was actually done in that time frame." The woman on the line asked for the ID number on the slip. He read it. Long pause. "I'm sorry," she said. "That code isn't valid. It's not in our system." Dean exhaled. She was lying. Even about that. Feeling bolder, Dean met with a private investigator, recommended by Allison's friend. "You're not the first guy I've seen go through this," the PI said, tapping his notebook. "But you might be one of the smarter ones. You documented everything. That's rare." The PI agreed to help. They started tracking Emma. Her phone, her online activity, and her location through public CCTV archives. But 3 days into their plan, something strange happened. Emma disappeared. No texts, no calls. Her phone disconnected. Her social media wiped clean. She stopped showing up at her apartment, and her mail started piling up in the box. It was like she had vanished. Dean didn't trust the calm. He knew Emma. This was strategy, not surrender. Still, he filed a counter-report with HR, including his evidence. The unedited voicemails, the restored text threads, the home surveillance video. He also attached the PI's verification that the pregnancy test was forged. It wasn't over, but he wasn't drowning anymore. Then a package arrived at Allison's house. No return address. Inside, a single flash drive. Dean plugged it into an old laptop, separate from his main devices. Just in case. There were three files, all labeled by date, all short audio clips. Each one was of him, taken from phone calls and voicemails, but cut, rearranged, spliced to sound like threats. In one of the edited clips, his voice said, "If you leave me, I'll make your life hell." Dean sat back in the chair, heart thudding. She was trying to frame him further. Even in hiding, she was still playing chess. But now he had both versions of the clips, the originals and the altered. And that meant she'd made her final mistake. She gave him proof that she knew exactly what she was doing. The last thing in the box wasn't a file. It was a photograph. Emma standing in front of a beachside motel, sunglasses, smiling. On the back. "Miss me?" It wasn't taunting. It was a warning. She was planning her return. And Dean needed to be ready. Chapter 5. Emma unmasked. The photo had been taken in Cape Haven, a quiet, windswept beach town 3 hours down the coast. Dean remembered it vaguely from a weekend trip years ago. Emma had never mentioned the place. Not once. Now there she was, on camera, smiling like she was starting over, or starting something. Dean and the private investigator